Good evening, everyone.
What's up, guys?
So Corey's not here tonight. He promised his wife he would watch the kids while she had a girls' night out. So he felt he owed it to her after all the time he's been gone with too many games, and he came down here 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so tonight we're joined by Bob from RetroRGB.com.
What's up, guys?
Bob has been on the stream before. If you aren't familiar with his website, it's a great resource for us as well. It was a big starting point for us, learning about all the different quirks of the systems, and he's got a ton of information there, and he's helped us out so unbelievably much with the show, especially in terms of getting our hands on hardware that we would never have gotten our hands on otherwise. You know, the high def NES episode is all thanks to him, and like a significant chunk of the Game Boy episode is going to be all thanks to him. So, and the upcoming OSSC, well, not OSSC episode, but the FrameMeister alternatives, a good part of the OSSC section is also thanks to Bob. So,
Well, I'm always happy to help, and I'm really glad that we all ended up kind of being buddies about this, because you guys make videos that are way better than I could ever make, so it's cool. Well, I'll stick to writing and doing the podcast, you guys stick to making kick-ass videos, and we'll all just help each other out.
Well, so. you have been doing a cool video thing lately. Now, I keep hearing you say podcast, but I think you're just referring to your YouTube show as a podcast.
Right, I treat it like a video podcast, because on YouTube is by far the best way to see it, because I always try to pop up the little things next to me so you can see what I'm talking about, but I have a lot of people emailing me telling me that they listen to it in their car and their commute, and it's just like, because I post it early on Monday mornings.
Right.
So they said it's kind of neat to unwind after the weekend and just like hear me droning on about retro gaming stuff rather than just sitting in traffic. So.
Yeah. So if this is something that I believe you started after the last time you were on the stream.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I had been planning this for months, but sometimes just taking the first step to do things is kind of like, well, am I ready? And I got a little drunk on the podcast with you guys, and I just said, yeah, my podcast is going to air tomorrow. And I woke up the next morning and went, shit, I just told like 300 people that I was going to have a podcast today. Better just get off my ass and do it. But yeah. to keep tradition, I got my Trooper beer, my favorite beer over here. So,
all right.
We'll start again tonight.
All right. Well, be sure to make some promises live on stream tonight. Make it
RGB monitors for everybody.
That's how you make it happen. So, but yeah. If people aren't familiar with it, Bob is you've been really consistent with it too. I don't even know if you've missed a week since you've started.
No, the only thing I've missed is interviews for people that I had to cancel at the last minute, because I try to do a fun interview with somebody in the retro gaming scene every week. But that's the only thing. Like somebody from the forums was supposed to go on, which will air tomorrow morning, and they kind of dropped out. So at the last second, I called my cousin Scott, who's helped me behind the scenes of the website since day one, and I was like, dude, we're doing a podcast at your house. I'll be there in an hour. So I'm not sure if it's going to come out that good, but, you know, hopefully we'll get some feedback and see what people thought of it.
Yeah, well, everyone be sure to check out the Retro RGB YouTube channel, because he's got this weekly roundup. That's what we're talking about. That's what it's called, the weekly roundup. And I think it's a really unique idea and offers something that I don't think is really widely available in any other form online, where Bob is kind of, you know, you're kind of in tune with what people are talking about on these sort of techie forums, and you know, so much of what's happening in the world of retro gaming is these techie people talking to other techie people on these techie forums, and a lot of us have no idea what interesting things people are working on that are kind of hidden under the surface, and you're kind of bringing that out in the forefront and letting people know about exciting things that are coming. And you do cool interviews basically every week with people. Like, you've interviewed Marks, the creator of the OSSC. You've interviewed HD Retrovision. You've interviewed, I think you just interviewed Badass Consoles.
Yeah, and last week was Artemio, which he's just been such a huge help to my website since day one. So it was cool to get him on there.
He's like pretty much the nicest person on the entire yeah, really planet.
It's the interviews have become my favorite part, man. Because even guys like Michael J. Moffitt, I mean, I've been following his websites and his work since day one, and he doesn't post a lot. I mean, he contributes a ton, but you know, he's not very vocal. And I was so happy to get his voice out there and have everybody kind of meet who he is and see what he does. So I love stuff like that.
That's awesome. So I assume you too, because I know you were really early on the bandwagon for the NES retro receiver. I assume you've got this too, right?
I do. I had SNES. It, and then I was in the middle of a huge, huge other project. So I'm really looking forward to doing this with you tonight, because I want to see if you run into the same issues I did, and if the updating the firmware is going to fix all the issues. And I think it'd be fun if we kind of walked everybody through it too, so it's like we're all in this together. So yeah, if something bad happens, we're all in it.
I had a lot of issues, as I kind of outlined in the NES retro receiver video. I had kind of had a lot of issues before I updated the firmware. I even had issues updating the firmware. And we heard, you know, as soon as this was announced, you know, we went straight ahead. Both of us went straight ahead and bought it. I think Corey has used his. He hasn't really said much to me about, but I've just been, you know, neck deep in editing this Frameleister Alternatives episode, when I'm finally starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But so I haven't even had a chance to, I haven't even opened this. Someone tweeted at us saying that there were some issues if you didn't update the firmware. At the time that they tweeted us, I don't think there was a fix. I think there is a fix now. But the interesting thing was, he said that there are a number of games that just flat out don't work. Right. And the wild thing to me was, it wasn't just certain games. It was like entire series. Like, the Donkey Kong Country series doesn't work. The Bomberman games don't work. Apparently, I want to think he said something along the lines of, you could navigate the menus in Super Mario All-Stars, but you couldn't play the games.
Right, right. Lots of weird things.
Like, if all it's doing is imitating the controller inputs to the SNES, I just cannot fathom, like, what the difference is from game to game.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
The thing that really got me, too, so this old console just asked if we use the 8-bit do Bluetooth controllers that are shaped like the SNES and Famicom ones. Yeah, that's actually the thing that kind of got me is, you know, I had like 10 minutes to kill, so I tore open what you're holding in your hand now, I plugged it in, I fired in Super Metroid, my favorite game, and I grabbed the SNES receiver, that one right there, which I love, and the right arrow wasn't very responsive at all. Hmm. Like, and that's like the most pushed button on any controller. So I just said, well, let me make sure it's not me. I paused the game, I threw in my regular SNES wired controller, and it was perfect, and I went, I bet you it's a firmware update. And then that was like 2 weeks ago, and I haven't had time to test it since then. Mm. So hopefully,
I'm hoping there won't be issues. You know, me and Corey were just talking the other day. Like, Corey is like kind of going all in on this. Like, he's going to make it his main way to play NES and Super Nintendo from now on, because his systems are across the room from where he sits. I was planning to mainly use them as player two, but I don't know. We'll see. I actually did kind of a dumb thing. I looked on Amazon for some cheap universal phone charging docks. And so I actually bought one for the Super Nintendo controller. I can just sit it on there upside down, because I feel like if I'm going to actually make serious good use of them, like, I have to have like a regular charging station for them, because that's just kind of how I operate. Like, I have to have like a place to put it, or else I won't like ever have it charged or anything. So,
well, the battery lasts a long time on that.
Yeah,
I mean, I played through all of another Metroid 2 remake on that, and it didn't even come close to dying on it. So
I played, I think it was with the NES controller, I played G.I. Joe on NES, and that took me like 5 hours to finish. And a friend of mine, he was using the Retron 5, and he played like a Game Boy game and then something. He was probably using it for like 8 hours. Let's see how this goes. But yeah, I don't really know how I'm going to use this, but it's a great thing to have, and you know, hopefully it works well. So you put it in, and just like before, it doesn't quite look like it goes in all the way, you know. And it's like, I don't know, I feel like there's a little loose give there, but hopefully it updates. If I remember right, what you're supposed to do, you have to actually hold the retro receiver button, like the sync button, while you stick it in your computer. In fact, it says that right.
Yeah, because that's what sets it into the actual upgrade mode and not pairing mode or something.
Yeah, so I've actually got the update software here, and hopefully this works. It's interesting. It appears that the Super Nintendo retro receiver and the NES retro receiver share the same drivers. Yep. Which I guess isn't that surprising, because people have told us several times, especially after we did the controller adapters episode, that I guess NES and Super Nintendo controllers like have the same pinouts or something. Like, even though the Super Nintendo has a lot more buttons, supposedly you can, if you have like a Super Nintendo to NES, like you can basically just like hack together a NES controller port and a Super Nintendo controller, and you can use it on your NES. There's no like actual conversion required. Right. So, kind of weird. So, I'm going to put this in.
It's actually also the same. So, they're NES and SNES controllers. So, both the Famicom and the North American looking ones also use the same firmware, because it's the same.
They all, thing, even the NES. Yeah, even the NES and Famicom ones, you know, they've got the four face buttons, and they've even got shoulder buttons on them. So, but it might be fun just to try that. But let's see, is this the right? Nope, that's the old firmware actually, right there, because that was what I put in. I put that in the controller adapters folder, the folder for that episode.
At least these updates go quick. It's not like the DVD-O update that I did that took 45 minutes for that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's really dumb. I'm having a hard time finding my downloads folder. There we go. Let's see, what is this folder called? 8-bit do 1.21? Yeah, that was today. Here we go. Current firmware is 1.1, okay. All right, there it goes. Oh, shoot, you know, I meant to... Before I actually did the firmware update, I meant to actually put it in the system and be like, oh, yep, Donkey Kong Country doesn't work. But
I mean, that's already been proven.
Yeah, and, I'll take people's word for it. It's just the weirdest thing.
So the thing, too, and I don't know, people might disagree with me on this, but if I had a choice between a company announcing a product and then, I mean, I'm not talking about like a personal project. I'm talking about like a bigger company. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have them announce a product, release it on the same day, and say, just make sure to update the firmware when you get it.
Yeah.
Than have them announce a product, doesn't ship for 3 months, but ships with the right firmware. You know, I'd rather just have it sooner.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that like they kind of more or less kept it on wraps. Like they did show it at E3. Like the day we released the video, actually, we got several comments. I think they may have been actually people who attended E3, because I don't know where on the internet this information would have been posted. Because, you know, I said in the video, if they would just make retro receivers for Super Nintendo and Genesis, like, man, that'd be great. And
especially Genesis, because that would cover Atari and a bunch of other Master System.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. And two, then I could play Genesis games with a Super Nintendo controller, and isn't that what we all really want?
No. I love both controllers. The Super Nintendo one's my favorite, but I love that big-ass Genesis 3-button controller. It's just so comfortable to me.
Yeah, I do have to admit that I like the 3, but like the 6-button I've never quite got used to, but I do like the 3-button controller. But Yeah, but you know, hopefully they do release a Genesis controller. And if they do, then I will use that for Genesis games. I'm kind of half joking about the controller thing.
All right, so describe really quick what your rig is right now. So you have a Super Nintendo. That's which one are you using? A Mini, the one chip?
I am using the Mini.
And that's the obviously RGB modded into a FrameMeister into your capture card.
Yes, it's going through the FrameMeister. I was going to like secretly put it through the OSSC, and then only say at the end that, oh, by the way, because we didn't want to make this episode about the OSSC, and I think I bumped my system or something because it's not on the screen anymore.
Yeah, you got no input. And then you're using the SNES version of the 8-bit Do controller into that retro receiver.
Yep. But yeah, I was going to run through the OSSC, and then I realized, oh, I don't have the audio set up to go through the OSSC right now. So, all right.
There you go. You're back.
No. Did it sync? I think you hold the select button to sync. Is that right?
I can't remember. I think I just turned it on and then hit the button on the receiver.
Okay, it's seeking. Really? The receiver is seeking. That was the select button. But it's definitely the receiver seeking, because I remember one of the first firmware updates they did for when the NES one came out was to make it actually blink a lot faster when it's in pairing mode. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we just got it. Yep. So DKC appears to be working. I thought I would just I'm going to just play through the whole game.
Yeah, go for it.
That's what I was planning to do.
That's a good game, too, because it's it's a good side-scroller, and you'll start to notice pretty much right off the bat if there's weird issues or if there's any lag.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. Like, actually, the DKC2 is my favorite in the series, but I feel a little more confident that I could finish this one in the stream. I think I could finish two in the stream, but this one just feels a little shorter. Mm-hmm. I didn't even mean to go in the bonus room there. Yeah, so far feels great. I mean, I know I said in the video for the NES retro receiver, because I just didn't have any hard info. I said, you know, I did some janky thing where I actually pushed the button, and you know, you see the Super Mario Brothers 2 character select raise their hand, and you know, I said at most one frame, but I honestly think it's probably less than that, if anything at all.
Yeah, so when I had the guy who did the Bliss Box on, Sean Green, he was talking a lot about that, and you could theoretically get, you know, imperceptible lag, so way less than one frame. Using Bluetooth like this, I think he said 18 milliseconds was his average. I might be forgetting about that, but it's I mean, it's if it's done right, you could get a pretty much lag-free solution.
Mm-hmm. Wow, dying on the second level is not a good start. But yeah, I'm sure it's very little. I mean, because, you know, the way I set up that test, like, first of all, like, it was not, like, you know, it was only, my camera was moving at 60 frames, you know? So, it, you know, I wasn't, you know, we weren't, like, going, like, crazy milliseconds or anything. Mainly because, you know, the refresh on the CRT would have been awful. If I'd shot it another refresh. And two, you know, I mean, when you're looking at that video, like, who can really say for sure when the button was pressed, you know?
Yeah. there's got to be a way we can figure out how to design something to do a more scientific way.
Yeah, Corey's been saying we should, like, see if anyone, you know, we know might be able to design just, like, an LED light-up thing.
Yeah, I was talking to Artemio about that last week. I was telling him you guys' idea, and he thought it was cool, too. He thought it was a good way to test it.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we could save, you know, more scientific stuff like that, but you know, I've had my mind a lot more lately on like the inherent lag of a TV, because I actually discovered, you know, I am not like overly sensitive to input lag at all, and I actually only just discovered that my Samsung TV's got like 4.5 frames of lag. It's a lot more than I thought. Of course.
Well, the reason you might not notice it is because on all the games that have been designed since after flat screens became mainstream, especially games like Shovel Knight, you know, where it's an old school style but meant for the newer consoles, mm-hmm. they take into account the fact that, you know, there's going to be frames of lag. So there aren't, you know, crucially timed jumps. Mm-hmm. It's still really challenging. It's just in a completely different way. It's really only super noticeable on retro games or on TVs that are just awful, like that one TV I tested with like 9 frames of lag or something.
Yeah, well, but I mean, like for me, you know, I'm obviously still playing like a lot of Framemeister games on it, and I still, you know, I still didn't realize it was quite that bad. But yeah, I was, you know, using the 240p test suite to, you know, get some information for, you know, so I could present a baseline of lag, you know, when I was explaining. So, but it ended up not being, you know, I kind of have to go out of my way to explain in the video that, you know, it doesn't add any lag on top of what your display does, but it looks like there's like 4 or 5 frames of lag, and you know, so it's kind of a clunky thing to have to articulate that when the visuals makes it look like there's like a whole bunch of lag.
Yeah.
So I have a little graphic that appears on screen saying, you know, my TV has about 4.5 frames of lag at best.
So I actually went in. I've been talking about going into a Best Buy and testing a bunch of the TVs, and I went in the other day and kind of started to write up a game plan.
So will they let you do that kind of stuff?
I think so. It's also talking to the right guy. You know, you get just a grumpy person. They don't want to help anybody. So you got to talk to the right person, and then you have to also find somebody that understands what exactly it is that you're doing, you know? Mm. But the biggest problem that I'm going to have is that you need the remotes for all the TVs. Most of them, you're not going to be able to use the side buttons to navigate right through the menu. So that's going to be an issue. And also, I figured, well, let me just go in and test every newer 4K TV just to get a good rating. Mm-hmm. But the Best Buy by my house has like 150 TVs in there. It's insane.
Oh my gosh.
So I went in to kind of scope the place out, and I'm going to come up with a much better, you know, a much better game plan, I guess you could say. And then I'm going to go in with a team of people and then just do as many as I can.
A team of people.
Oh, yeah. I already got Wes from Second Opinion Games. I told him whether he likes it or not, he's coming with me. Mm-hmm. My cousin Scott, who's on the podcast tomorrow, he's been recruited. And Joey, the bassist in my band, is also a pretty hardcore gamer. He does mostly the online multiplayer games, but you know, he understands what gaming's about, so I'm dragging his ass with me to do it as well.
That's going to be awesome, man. You should, like, document this trip.
it's going to be a video. It's going to be a full thing. So.
That's going to be amazing. See, the thing I love about this game is that the level design is, like, so precise. Like, there's just a rhythm to the way the levels flow, and they introduce an idea, and then throughout the level, it kind of makes a bunch of permutations on that idea. Like I feel like these games, like I plan to do like a big, like whole series sort of retrospective on them. Eventually, it's going to be like a huge undertaking, obviously, but it I mean, I just don't think they get enough credit, just like in terms of just being good platforms. Like, I think a lot of people look back and think, oh, you know, those games were just about the graphics. And I don't think that's the case at all. I just think they are some of the most pure, good platformers ever made.
Well, I think they used the graphics to market the amazing game that they made. It's one of those cases where you really get the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, I think the graphics have aged, like, super well, in my opinion.
Me too.
Better than, really probably better than almost any other pre-rendered game.
So, a funny story about this. Do you remember Funko Land? Did you guys have that around?
Oh, man, yeah. I'll rave about Funko Land whenever I can. That was good times.
So, I mean, my whole life, I'll talk to anybody. Even though I've always been a nerd, I don't really give a shit. Football player, you know, metalhead, gaming guy, I don't care. I just talk to whoever. And I ended up meeting a guy who worked at a Funko Land and became, like, buddies with him. And I walked in there one time to, you know, just trade in some games and get new ones. And he comes in, you know, like, almost like doing a drug deal. Like, hey, you got to come over here and look at this. And he, like, pulls open his hoodie. And he has 3 copies, brand new, of Donkey Kong Country, which wasn't supposed to be out for over 2 months at that point.
Oh, wow.
So remember, this is way before, like, the internet was a big deal. And, you know, you could just jump on and see reviews. Like, the only way people knew about it from, like, Nintendo Power and Electronic Gaming Monthly, but that was pretty much it. So I pretty much sold everything I had on me to get enough cash, and I like begged him to buy a couple of games off of me too, because he would buy Master System games because Funko Land wouldn't take them in. So I got enough cash for it, and I said, you know, how did you get this? And he pointed, you know, to this family over there. He's like, see that girl over there? Her dad works for Nintendo, but she likes Genesis, not Nintendo, so they gave him these promo games, and she doesn't even like them, so she just traded them in for a bunch of Genesis games. So I ended up going home with a brand new copy of this game, and it's just like, I was the nerd hero in my 8th grade class, because I had it before everybody else.
This is like, this is not Super Donkey Kong, this is the American version.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I was absolutely crazy. That was just... you know, one of the many lucky moments I've had with stuff like that.
That is absolutely crazy. So there, I don't know if you can see it on the stream, but in this level I'm noticing some really weird stuff on my TV. Like, I don't know if it's just because it's so dark and, like, the ghosting of the LCD screen, but, like, it almost looks like there's some, like, the level itself is transparent. I can see the background.
I mean, I'm obviously just watching it on YouTube, and I could see it pretty good. I mean,
I don't know. I'm looking over at my CRT. I don't know. Like, there's something weird about how it's... Yeah, it's definitely just the HDTV. Like, I think it's because it's so dark, and, like, it's just making the ghosting look really bad for some reason.
You should have been playing on your PVM. Split the signal through your G-SCART.
Well, it is on the PVM. Like, it's not convenient to where my stream setup is. Mm. Oh man, going downhill. But yeah, I loved Funko Land. Like that. You know, there were 2 near me, and it was a great time to be getting into what was back then only barely retro gaming.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I didn't get a Super Nintendo until 94, and once I got that, like, I just stopped playing my NES.
Yeah, me too. It was so much better at the time. It's like, why would you go backwards?
Right, like, the only game... Like, I didn't have a ton of NES games in my original collection. And, like, the only ones that I, like, really, really loved were Mario 1, 2, and 3 anyway.
Mm.
Well, there were a few other, like, Chip and Dale. I really liked it. But
DuckTales.
Like,
DuckTales was always phenomenal.
Yeah, but I didn't have it.
Oh, really?
I have it now, but I didn't have it at the time. My only experience, you know, I used to think that I'd rented or borrowed a copy of DuckTales from a friend for the longest time. And then when I finally got DuckTales, I was like, I don't remember these levels. And then when I got the Famicom version of DuckTales 2, I was like, oh, I knew someone that actually had DuckTales 2.
And it, oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and in my memory, it was, I was playing just playing DuckTales 1, but the first level in DuckTales 2, like, yeah, as soon as I played it, I was like, wow, this is the game that I played way back then.
Huh.
You know, I didn't, you know, I remember how Funkoland had the, had those little newspapers that had, like,
oh, I used to love those.
The prices of, like,
the price guides and everything, yeah.
Yeah, and then they had, like, you know, upcoming games and stuff. And I saw on the price guide, like, there were a few times where, like, a game never came out on the upcoming list.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was, like, some Wario game. That, or it maybe eventually was released under another name or something, but they had something that was called, like, I don't know, like Wario's Treasure Hunt or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's
exactly
why I love all those unreleased ROMs that get posted online now. That's why I always report on that in the weekly news thing that I do, just because it's, even the games that aren't good, it's still fascinating to me, especially because I remembered reading about some of them in the magazines back in the day.
Yeah.
And then I'll, you know, somebody, I'll read online, like, oh, the, you know, ROM dump was posted, and I'll go, oh, that's right, I forgot all about that. So
yeah, so I don't know. I remember specifically there being some Wario game that never actually came out, and so I didn't quite trust their lists that much. So when I saw, like, on their, you know, retro price lists, I saw, like, a Chip 2 and a DuckTales 2, and I'd literally never seen those games, I was like, ah. Well, I say literally. I had played DuckTales 2 and didn't know it. But, you know, it was just funny because I literally didn't believe that those games existed, but they did.
I just did a quick Google search, and the only thing that popped up was Mario and Wario for Super Nintendo.
Now I want to get that. That's like, do you know? Are you familiar with that? It's
No, I just found it online, just doing this.
It's not expensive, but every time I go to a con, like, they're trying to sell it for a lot more than it should be, so I never buy it, but. It's a mouse-based game. It's the very first game Wario was ever in.
Hmm.
Which is so crazy because you think of him as a Game Boy character.
Yeah.
But he originated in Mario and Wario for the Super Nintendo. It's you control like a fairy or something, if I'm remembering right. You move control like a bucket or something, and, like, basically protect Mario from Wario dropping stuff on his head. I've never played it, but I've always meant to get it. You actually use the mouse with it, so it's interesting. It came with a bundle.
Somebody
package.
Just posted in the comments that they can't find this NES mouse. I don't know what it is, but the retro game stores around me in the New York City area, they always have, like, 3 or 4 of them laying around. I wonder if it's just region-based where some, you know, you find more in some places than others. But, you know, stuff like this is why I really, really love ROM carts, though, because there were so many games that I'd read about. Like, Chiller was the one, that unreleased Zapper game for the Nintendo where you could use 2 Zappers at the same time. And it just, I'd always read about it, both because it was, you know, or not unreleased, it was unlicensed, because it was one of those unlicensed games, because you could use both guns. And it just, when I finally, like, it was $100-something, and I just tried it on an EverDrive and went, well, that's really neat. I'm really glad I spent 10 minutes playing that. I'm never going to play this game again. So, stuff like that. But I always buy the games that I love, but I'm so happy I get to try them before I buy them now.
But yeah, Funkoland was like, so, like, but, you know, aside from, you know, a few oddball things where I'm like, is there really a Chip 2? Which, yeah, obviously there is, but I was very skeptical of it for a time. But generally speaking, you could just like walk in and be like, I want to get this game. They open up a drawer and pull it out.
Yeah.
Like it was because I, you know, like I said, I stopped playing my Super Nintendo or stopped playing my NES. But then, and I actually sold my NES because I hadn't played it in years to, you know, get some money for the N64. And then, like, shortly after that, like, you know, I started getting more into the internet, and, I was like, people were talking about all these NES games that I'd completely missed. Like, none of my friends had even played Mega Man. Like, I literally did not know about Mega Man until Mega Man 7.
I didn't play Mega Man 1. Where I lived, everywhere I went, they had Mega Man 2, but you could never find it. And I'd ask all the game stores, and they'd say, all right, maybe we'll try to order it for you, and then they never could. Mm. And it's just... So I didn't play Mega Man 1 until, like, 4 or 5 years ago. It's awesome.
But yeah, I'm really fortunate because I got all of them. Like, that was one of my top priorities once I... I got my NES again, like... probably like 98 maybe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it wasn't super retro at that point, but it was like, it was a good time to be like building a collection for a system like that, because you had a store like Funko Land and you literally could get almost anything that just crossed your mind. And you know, so it took me a little longer to get Mega Man 6, but you know, like everyone wants a copy of Mega Man 5 now, but I mean, I've had that for like, you know, probably 17 years.
Yeah.
Because it was just, you know, it was very smart that I got it when I did, because it's obviously so expensive now. But you know, my favorite Funko Land story is that I just walked in one day and you know I'd heard Earthbound was good and. And, you know, they had Earthbound, and it was $35, and I bought it. And, you know, I obviously at the time, that didn't seem like such a big deal, but I'm sure glad I got it when I did. it was a great store. I loved it.
So the guy, the same guy that got me Donkey Kong Country, I actually remember his name. It was Jack Baldwin, because it's the same as one of the Baldwin brothers, the actors. I wonder if I'll ever run into him. I wonder if he, like, listens to this or even remembers, like, oh, yeah, it was that fat kid that used to bug me when I worked at Funko Land. He taught me a lot about this stuff. Like, he was the first one to explain that there were two Tetrises for the Nintendo and, you know, how one of them was going to be rare and worth something someday, but Funko Land didn't judge by that. So, you know, they gave you $4 no matter what, you know, the copy was, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
The only reason I met him was because somebody told me that there's a guy that worked there that buys and sells Master System games. And because they didn't, Funko Land didn't, his boss was cool with it. His boss would just let him do it as long as he didn't take away from their business. So I learned a lot. And Mortal Kombat, when that came out for Super Nintendo, it was Mortal Monday that it got released on. And then when Mortal Kombat 2 came out, I guess it was supposed to be Mortal Tuesday, which is a little cheesy. But they received the stock on Monday, and you were supposed to get fined if you sold it early, and they did. They're like, yeah, whatever, let's just sell it a day early and see what happens. And they were like the only store to sell out in, you know, all of my area, and I think he put one aside for me or something. It was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, every once in a while you'd get lucky with something like that. Like, I remember Majora's Mask guy got into stores a few days early, I think. My other, what was it? I had another story about Funko Land, and now it slipped my mind. What was it? I can't remember. It'll come to me.
Sorry, I keep going through the comments to make sure I don't miss anything. I'm trying to, you know, divvy my attention between my beer and the comments and the game and talking to you. So it's cool. This is fun. This is like the perfect thing for somebody with the concentration issues, because there's always something I get to look at.
So. But yeah, it was... go on.
No, I just... somebody posted Funko Land with a question mark. Yep, that was what they called it. Funko Land.
Funko Land. Actually, I want to say that their headquarters were near where I lived in the time. At the time, I lived in Delaware. And
Delaware?
Northern Delaware, near Wilmington.
Yeah, I've been in Wilmington many times, and I can't think of a reason to go back.
Yeah, it's not much. I want to say their headquarters were like kind of near there. Like I was also kind of just getting into RPGs at the time, and I ordered Chrono Trigger online. It was like, you know, so expensive even used back then, but it was like, it was one of the best $70 I ever spent, because it, you know, was definitely what got me into RPGs.
Quintifier just posted that you're from Delaware. So a lot of my memories of the places that I've traveled to were from this job that I had, where I would do work for hospitals. I still kind of do, but this was like the dream job I had, where I got to travel all around the world. So whenever I got stuck in a place doing some awful thing, like, you know, we'd show up and the team that was supposed to go in and do everything just didn't. So I'd have to spend from 6 a.m. to midnight, 4 days in a row, running network cable and climbing through, air vents just to be able to connect two words together. I always have like a deep-seated hatred for those places, even though it's not the city I was in. It was just a terrible job I had to do. So, sorry, Quintifier. No offense to the Delaware people.
It's a convenient place to live. I mean, there's like a lot of, you know, it's very accessible to a lot of places.
Yeah. And there's all that, the U.S. Starting a business there. You have different tax rules if you start it in Delaware and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, you don't have sales tax in Delaware.
Yeah. But
I'm low on lives, so I went back and saved in the previous world. I didn't expect that I would actually be getting low on lives. I'm not going to blame the controller, though.
So somebody in the comments just asked about what's the thoughts on the GBS 8200 board as a simple line doubler. I've actually never used that before, but people that have an eye for this stuff have and tell me that it's really great if you're just simply looking to do things like... I think the people that I know used it to replace an arcade monitor with a VGA monitor. So it looks a little different. I don't like the changed look of the scan lines, but it certainly served its purpose, and it definitely doesn't add any lag or anything like that.
Yeah, so that's actually one of the things that's going to be in the FrameMeister Alternatives episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Corey was describing it to me, at first I thought it was a line doubler, not actually a scaler, but he went and asked Artemio some questions about it. And so Artemio ran some tests on it, and Artemio said it was a scaler, not a line doubler, because the scaling is uneven.
And well, that would be potential for adding lag as well. I wonder if I'm thinking of the right one. Is that the one with like the VGA input on it?
It's like a bare board.
Yeah, maybe
it sounds like a line doubler, but but you can also have it output at like all kinds of resolutions. Like at first I thought it was only 640 by 480 because you pair up the scan line generator with it. And you have to have it 640 by 480 to use the scan line generator, but you can output it, you know, all kinds of other resolutions too. So it is a scaler. Corey actually gave me a shot where he's using the drop shadow test on the 240p test suite with it, and it's kind of to demonstrate that there's some ugliness going on with the drop shadow, but what's really interesting is you can see like just how uneven the scrolling is. He gave me one shot of a vertical shmup, but it was a PlayStation game, and it was 3D graphics, so it wasn't really something that let me see how like a vertical shmup would look. But there's like you know, in the Chrono Trigger opening cinematic, there is like a there's like some shots of like the courtroom and Magus's castle that do a sort of a slow scroll up or down, and you could really see like it was very uneven, and I have the shot from that in the video. So I mean, horizontal scrolling, as far as I could see, was good, but vertical spacing was a bit off. So yeah, it's definitely not a line doubler. So the only true line doubler that we feature in the episode is the OSSC. And from everything I've heard, like, you know, the OSSC is like so good that at this point there's not like a lot of reason to really think about other line doublers.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like anyway. I mean, it's the only one I've used, so...
Hey, so now you've been playing, just to interrupt real quick, because I think you're about at a save point.
I just used a save point.
So you're using this 8-bit do SNES controller. Mm-hmm. And any issue so far? Because the game looks like it's been going pretty smoothly. Any issue in the gameplay?
No. There's, you know, I mean, this is a simple game. It doesn't use...
Yeah, but you'd notice. If this is one of your favorites, you'd totally notice if there was something...
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing kind of crappy at it, but I don't think... I don't think it has anything to do with the receiver. I'm noticing, you know, this is the first time I've like seriously used the Super Nintendo controller. You know, I've used the NES and Famicom ones a lot. It's there's a bit more of a click to the buttons than I'm used to for Super Nintendo, and I feel like that could potentially be throwing me off a little bit. But, you know, otherwise, I mean, you know, it's like you don't even really think about it. Like, I feel like there's like a phantom wire right now of the controller now, you know.
Then did you want to try a different controller at some point, too, like the Wii U Pro controller? Or do you want to stick with this one and just...
This one definitely seems like the one to do, but maybe I will try another one just for the fun of it. Why not, you know?
Yeah, just to see.
I mean, I was thinking about playing the whole game, but what do you think? Would it be more interesting if I gave something else a try? I mean,
Let's see what the people in the comments think. I think maybe just from like a nerd point of view, keeping the same game but switching the controller might be a good way to test.
Yeah.
Because now you're already used to it. You're used to the feel of the game. You know, you've been playing it for a little, you know, a little while now. So maybe that'll be
This is essentially a two-button game. I wonder what would happen if I tried to play it with the Wii remote. I mean, if it has the same drivers,
actually, yeah,
there can't be any reason that it wouldn't pair up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Yeah, so let's see.
What about the Wii U Pro Controller? Because that one has all the buttons, but that's the most common one to use on the Wii U now for people that want to buy the virtual console games.
Right.
You still have one of those, right?
The Pro Controller?
Yeah, you Wii U Pro Controller, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I love it. It's actually my go-to PC controller.
So somebody in the comments asked, what do you think's a better value, a Hori N64 pad or a GameCube to N64 controller adapter? Because that's a huge price difference. That Hori pad's like $100 minimum, right?
You know, I've never used it, and like I've kind of drooled over it, but then I kick myself and I remind myself, hey, guess what? You're one of the few people that actually like N64 controllers, so just use it. The thing that bugs me about it is like the D-pad is just in like the absolute, like it's unusable, like unless it's just like a item select or something, and I can't even think off top of my head of what games might use it in that capacity. But like if you want to play something like Mischief Makers or Kirby or something, like, I mean, you couldn't play Sin and Punishment with it. I mean, it would literally be impossible to play Sin and Punishment with that controller. I don't I don't know. I've held one before, but I've never used it actually connected to a system. I don't know. But, you know, remember, this is coming from the perspective of someone who likes it. I will say this. Like, that was the biggest surprise for me in the controller adapters episode. You know, Corey was the one who was sent that that controller adapter from RaphNet. And, you know, he was like, I think you would do a better job with this. And I was like, sure. But I was kind of like, but what's the point? Because I like the N64 controller and you don't. So it's like, there's no, like, not necessarily any appeal to me. But I was really surprised, like, how much I enjoyed using that adapter. Because it, you know, it was just so customizable. And I was like, ooh, well, there's like a lot of games where, you know, that would actually be really interesting. Like, you know, even something silly like using the Hori pad with, you know, some side scrollers, or, you know, inverting the camera, because most games wouldn't give you that option back then. So there's like all kinds of really cool things you can actually do with it. So I legitimately enjoyed using that adapter. So I would absolutely recommend that. I mean, it's cheap. You can buy fresh, brand new GameCube controllers for you know, Smash Brothers now. So I think it's an absolutely great thing, and that's coming from someone who likes N64 controllers. So all right, I'll switch controllers now.
So since you just saved, why don't you try with the game on, maybe? Like in the middle of the level, either pause it or something and try switching controllers just to see what happens. Does it ruin it? Does it freeze it?
Oh, like if I'm yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so this is a tough level, so this is probably a bad time to switch controllers, but it's not like the game's going to get any easier, so.
Right, yeah. And somebody had asked before about the arcade exhibit in Long Island. If you're within a reasonable drive of there, I definitely recommend it. I think it's only going on for another month, but if you look back in my retro roundups, I actually went there with the game hunter Francisco, and I honestly thought I was gonna go there for 20 minutes and shoot a video with Francisco, one for his channel, and leave. We stayed the whole 2-hour session. All the games are free to play, and you know, they had like the Pac-Man and some of the ones that are okay, but the stuff, like, if you haven't seen a vector graphics arcade machine, you have to see it in person. There's no way to explain it. You have to actually witness it and play it yourself. So I definitely recommend, if you're within, you know, the New York area or Long Island or anything, you know, Long Island's like a black hole of traffic, so, you know, it's kind of a pain, but I definitely recommend it if somebody's around that area, so. Have you ever actually seen any of the vector graphics games?
I mean, I've seen like, is it similar to how like Space War looks in the arcade?
I don't know about Space War, but there was, have you ever played a Vectrix?
No.
Oh, I gotta email you one of those. Or not email you, I gotta mail you one of those to try out, because that's, you're gonna go nuts. It's a totally different experience.
No, I know our friend Game Dave has a Vectrex. He likes to tell the story about how that was actually his first video game system. But MagFest usually has Space War in the arcade.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it looks cool. Like, you know, like, you know, there's these trails behind the things as they move.
Yeah. The Star Wars arcade, somebody just popped up in the comments. That was my favorite, definitely. I just, you know, they had the pre-recorded voices, which were a little bit cheesy, but still really freaking cool. It was just, I mean, I really liked it. It was totally different.
So, I don't know if you've noticed this. I mean, I assume you have, because it's kind of obvious. When a controller makes a successful pairing with the retro receiver, this is the same case on both of them, it hits the start button.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that?
So say that again, I'm sorry.
So when the pairing actually succeeds, like the start button is like pressed.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Huh.
So, like, for example, when I paired up the... So what I ended up... I had to do... I had to hold the start button on the Super Nintendo-style controller turned off. That unpaused the game. And I was like, oh, so I paused it again. Then I held it until it turned off. Because it automatically wanted to talk to this one again when I hit the sync button. So I turned it off, hit the sync button on that again, hit the sync button on this, and when it paired up, it unpaused the game. Huh. So it's weird. The NES one does that too. And at first I wrote about it in the script, but I decided it wasn't like a major enough of a thing to waste video time on, but...
So a couple people in the comments, one was asking where to get the... where to get their N64 modded. If you just go to my site, I link to everybody in the US that does it. I think there's 3 shops. And then if you're in Europe, Video Game Perfection does it. And then somebody else was, or I was trying to post, I forgot you can't post links in the comments.
So, I can.
For the arcade, it's not a big deal. For the arcade exhibit, I just posted the name of Francisco's channel. If you just search through for the arcade exhibit, his video came out way better than mine. What a shock. But but yeah, that's it actually walks you through the arcade exhibit and everything. But that was, anybody that's around should check that out. And I, Mark, reminded me to just mail you a Vectrex one of these days. You're going to love it.
Yeah, so far so good with the Wii U Pro Controller. The only thing I don't like about the Wii U Pro Controller is that it just, like, for primarily, D-pad games, like, it just doesn't feel like a great fit for that style of game to me.
Yeah. If it's working fine, you want to get to the next save point and then I guess try a different one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, well, DualShock 3 would be a pain, but maybe I'll try DualShock 4.
Yeah, because don't you have to do something with the PC?
Yeah, you actually have to pair it up with the PC, and it's just a huge pain in the neck. So yeah, I'll try a DualShock 4. One of my DualShock 4s will not go into the pairing mode.
That's weird.
Yeah, so, like, the way Sony wants you to pair it up is to actually connect it to the system via USB, which is how you have to pair up a DualShock 3, but as far as I know, Sony primarily only really tells you about the hookup to the system method for the PS4 as well. You hold, I think, PS and share, is that right?
I think something like that.
And then the light bar does this like double blink sort of thing. And then you can, pair it up with something else wirelessly. But
I haven't played much on a PlayStation 4 lately. I mean, between everything I got going on, I haven't actually played that many games lately. At least not nearly as much as I would want to. But the PS4K or whatever they're going to call it, I guess it's going to be announced officially in a few weeks.
Yeah, I think it's like September 7th. I think I'm going to pick one of those 7th. Yeah, I probably am going to. You know, I was telling Corey earlier. I'm thinking about all these things that like I want to buy, but I don't know if I can like really afford everything I want to buy right now. Because I'm probably going to want to get a PlayStation Neo or whatever it's called. I kind of want PlayStation VR. I mean, we'll see. Not necessarily a super immediate priority.
Yeah, I would love to try one. I just really don't know if I'd throw down the money for it yet.
We got to try an HTC Vive when we visited Limited Run Games.
Yeah?
That was pretty fun. That was like my first like real VR experience. Like I I briefly tried like an early Oculus at Too Many Games a few years ago, and it was not that impressive.
I got one of these things. So this is one of those. They used to be like 100 and something, and then because nobody bought it for 100, now it's like $20. But you basically. You stick your cell phone in here.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, I got a Game Boy Color case for my iPhone. I love it. And then you stick that thing in here, and then you slide it in the side, and then you look amazingly uncool strapping this thing to your head. And then it has, I've played some of the motion tracking games and stuff like that, and it's pretty cool. It's just, I used to think the iPhone screen was absolutely beautiful until you strap it an inch away from your face and you can see every single pixel. It's suddenly less impressive. And my cousin Scott, the one that's going to be on the podcast tomorrow, actually got to work with a company who's doing a lot of the virtual reality games. And they're all saying how frustrating it is because you're essentially, in order to really get a true virtual reality feel, you need very high resolution screens in front of your eyes. Mm-hmm. And what you're essentially doing right now, even with the Oculus Rift, is it's basically a screen from a cell phone. So although it's amazing, guys' theory was that it was a few years away.
That was my initial reaction when we tried the Vive, because at first I was like, let's see, am I right? There's an espresso over here. My initial reaction was like, wow, I sure can see the pixels. And I that was also my reaction when I tried that early Oculus Rift, and I was like, oh, this isn't. I thought it was a little bit more improved. Beyond that at this point, but it is pixely, you definitely get that screen door effect. Mm-hmm. But once you sort of get into the immersion of it, it's more cool.
Yeah, there's that one, the roller coaster simulator, and it's kind of funny because when I first started testing it, I just immediately was impressed with it. I'm looking around, and next thing you know, I get motion sick. So I kind of put it down, and it actually had to be, I had to pretend like I was on the roller coaster, and I was looking forward, and as long as I kept tilting my head to look forward, I'd never got the motion sickness. It was really neat. It was weird that it actually tricked my brain into thinking that I was actually moving.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about the Vive, is that you actually have to have a room dedicated to it, and it it tracks you as you physically move around in that space. Yeah. So something that doesn't have those requirements like the PlayStation VR, I don't know if it didn't make me motion sick at all. I mean, it was very fun. But I'm curious if I'll react well to. As well to the PlayStation VR. I you said, I would love to have a chance to try it before I buy it.
Right. Well, my opinion on that is if it's done right, it really is going to be the next level. Once we all plug into the Matrix at some point and actually become inside the game, that'll be really the ultimate virtual reality. But the thing that I really want to try, I reported on a few weeks ago, it's Madame Tussauds Wax Museum in New York City. Has a Ghostbusters virtual reality thing that you could pay like $20 to go do, but they basically digitize the inside of a room. So you put on your VR helmet and then you strap on your Ghostbusters pack, which is really just like a computer and a backpack, and you're going around a real room and you're actually walking around, and the room is digitized in the game. So if you hold on to the handrail and walk up the stairs, it's actually there in front of you, and you're really fighting ghosts that jump out. And I really think that's what's going to be the difference. That's what's going to be the thing that, really you can't get that experience at home,
Right. And that's, that was, it was kind of funny because I remember, there was a place called Disney Quest that was in, it wasn't like part of the main Disney parks. It was like a I mean, I assume it still exists, but, you know, it was kind of funny because, you know, my cousins were hyping it up and saying, you know, it's cool. You know, there's like all these like video gamey type things there. It was a lot of virtual sort of experiences, you know. And it was funny because, you know, I'm playing it there. I'm like, you know, like home video games are already beyond this point. So I'm sure it's like super outdated now. It's interesting, you know, when you say something like that is, that really is the sort of experience that you would have to go to a place to enjoy that. You couldn't just either do that at home.
You know, like, I always wanted a really great airplane simulator. There's one at the Air Museum right on the actual, I forgot what it was, the Intrepid Museum, right on the carrier they have there, where you could actually, like, you strap yourself in. Like, imagine the Afterburner arcade, but you actually can spin around and back and forward and everything else. So, you know, that would be cool, but at home, maybe that same thing, you can call it drone simulator. So you don't, you know, now you're sitting comfortable on an easy chair, and that's why you're not flipping upside down, because you're piloting a drone and not a, you know, you could use your imagination well enough to fake something like that. But.
Yeah, but, like, what I'm really hoping, like what's going to be my killer app for VR is if Resident Evil 7's VR portion, because I remember reading that people who tried the VR at E3, like they said it was like very, very disorienting. And I feel fairly confident that that's like the sort of thing that they're going to be able to fix by release. But like if that turns out well, like that would probably be what would get me to buy a PlayStation VR.
Yeah, and there's another, let me see if I have it on my phone here, because there's a, it's a game that I was told about, Sisters, I think it's called, Sisters, or Stories, or, I must have deleted it, but it's basically just a, it's basically a game where it's almost an interactive movie. So, like, imagine Phantasmagoria or The Seventh Guest back in the day, but you strap on the VR helmet and you look around the room. So just like in all those old point-and-click games, you look around the room, you click on something, and then you wait for your CD-ROM to spool up so it zooms in on it. So it's like that, but, you know, much, much quicker.
One of the developers at Mighty Rabbit, which is like the parent company, so to speak, of Limited Run Games, one of the developers was telling us that I think it's like the VR mode in Fallout 4. You can only move around so much physical space, and that, but you know, the game world is obviously a lot larger. And you like apparently like point somewhere and you like teleport to that point, and then you can walk around the immediate area, and then teleport somewhere else again. He said it like actually works like a lot better than you would think. It's like actually pretty natural. And someone else was telling me about that same thing. And you know, apparently several people are saying that it like actually works really well, but in my mind, I'm thinking that sounds dumb. Like I want to be able to like walk everywhere, you know, but I think it has something to do with the fact that if you're using analog sticks to move your character around in a VR space, like it makes you motion sick because your body is not moving. But
exactly, yeah.
I don't know if that's the sort of thing that would bother me or not. I mean, it's hard to say. Without
there was
trying
that guy in the UK that used I think pretty much the same virtual reality mask I just showed and Googled Maps. And he jumped on his treadmill and would run across, you know, down the street using Google Maps. And he jogged the length of the UK, you know, within a couple of weeks or something, just on his morning exercising. So that was kind of
neat. How would that even work, though? Because Google Maps, like, it's, like, so choppy. Like, it doesn't have, like, every single point along the road, does it?
It kind of does, but it is a choppy experience. And to be honest, even if it was a fluid 60 frames per second thing. I imagine I'd get bored of that within a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'd rather just go run outside. So. So you are you still on which controller are you using now?
I'm still on the Wii U Pro. I just saved.
Yeah, maybe you switch over to another one and see.
Let me get to a less precarious position. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I just totally forgot to swap. Actually, I'm not even positive this controller is charged because my DualShock 4 charging dock has two seats on it, and I think one of them is broken. So let's see if this even... No, this controller... Oh, wait, no, it's alive. Let's see, how do I... Okay, I just hold the power button on the Wii U Pro. I've got the, this is my white DualShock 4. I use it with the PlayStation TV. Oh, interesting. Okay, it synced up, but it did not unpause it. So, here we go.
Yeah, so for anybody that's just joining, one of the first things that we did was update the firmware of the Retro Receiver because of all the problems people were talking about when they received it. And so far, there's been no issues at all. And whereas we didn't really test pre-firmware update because everybody's already been reporting all the issues. But yeah, I mean, the firmware seems to have solved the problems.
Yeah, I meant to test it before I updated the firmware, but... you know, this is like immediately a lot more comfortable to play because I really like the Wii U Pro controller for, you know, like Smash Brothers or something, but games where you use the D-pad, like primary is your primary input, it's a little, oops, it's a little uncomfortable. But, you know, I really like the gamepad. You know, a lot of people give the gamepad kind of some flack, but I feel like I prefer the gamepad to the Pro Controller overall because it's, you know, it's just more versatile and it's got a great, like the D-pad is in a great location. So it's great for playing games like Shovel Knight. And, you know, I like the analog sticks on it. I like the big fat triggers on it. You know, the Pro Controller is comfortable too, but I never like choose it unless I'm playing like Smash Brothers or something and someone else is using the gamepad.
For whatever reason, for me personally, because I wasn't a huge PlayStation gamer compared to the rest of the consoles, but whenever I start playing any game on any of the PlayStations, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, it's a weird adjustment period. Like, I can go back and forth from Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis, even Saturn, really, and never have an issue. I got used to playing on the Xbox controllers for a while when that first came out, but... Whenever I switch over to the PlayStations, there's definitely, like, you know, I was playing the latest Mortal Kombat with a couple of my buddies, you know, a few weeks ago, and the first half hour was just my hands getting used to the controller.
It was a long period for me because for the longest time, I owned PlayStation consoles very begrudgingly. The only reason I owned them was because if I wanted to play RPGs, because I wasn't really into RPGs until like the late 90s. And then, you know, I started, you know, picking up some of the Super Nintendo RPGs I'd missed. But if I wanted to play new RPGs, I had to have a PlayStation. And I was really disappointed that my PlayStation didn't come with the non-DualShock controller. Yeah. Because I didn't like it. I did not like it. I didn't like that, you know, downward reach to the sticks. But now I'm just like so used to it and I really like it. It's the Xbox controller that kind of screws with me because it's got the reversed ABXY.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
And that I can, like, whenever there's a button prompt. Like, the A and the B I do okay with because I think of them more like confirm and cancel than anything. So those I can do okay with. Of course, the whole confirm-cancel swap up between Nintendo and the everyone else, like, I could not deal with the X Confirmed for the longest time, but now it's to the point where now I'm used to it. You know, if I'm holding a controller with handles, then, you know, Confirm is on X and Cancel is on Circle. That's why I can't use the, I'm okay with the Wii U Pro Controller, but the, you know, the classic, what they call the Pro Classic Controller for the Wii?
Right.
You know, the original one is a flat design, but then the second one has, like, the handles. And I could not use that controller because when I hold it, my brain says PlayStation controller. And I'm hitting the wrong button for Confirm and Cancel. I could not use that controller at all.
Somebody in the comments posted something that just made me laugh out loud. They said, "You sound a little bit like Tom Hanks. Anyway, you'll yell out Wilson."
I get that all the time.
Do you really?
I don't hear myself. I've actually never seen Castaway, so I don't know exactly what it's, tone he says he shouts Wilson in.
It's shockingly a good movie. When I watched it, I thought for sure it's just Tom Hanks on an island. You know, this is going to get boring. For some crazy reason, it didn't ever get boring.
But I'll try. Wilson!
Whenever you post this video, I am totally going to pull that video and audio clip out of it. I'm just going to leave that at the end of one of my podcasts.
Did it sound close enough?
Good enough, man. Good enough.
The other one that I get asked to do is there's a snake in my boot. Yeah, I do not hear the resemblance at all, but I get that all the time.
I hate the sound of my own voice, and the weirdest thing is when, like, we played a gig last night that didn't have vocal monitors, so every time I heard my own voice, it was echoing throughout the back of the music hall and back to the front, and it was just the weirdest thing to hear me in, like, a half a second delay, and it's just, I hate it. Yeah, like, it's singing pitch, I don't know, it drives me nuts. I don't even, like, listen to myself in the podcast sometimes.
Well, you know, at first, you know, it was really weird, but through all the years I've done of streaming and then doing my life in gaming, like, I'm just so used to hearing my own voice now. And what the weird thing is, you know, like, it used to be, like, a completely different voice. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm so used to hearing my voice come back at me from a computer, it's not, I don't know, it doesn't sound
like... You're just used to it now, right?
Well, I don't know if I'm just used to it, but it doesn't even sound like a different voice is the thing. Hmm. Like, if that makes sense. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it used to sound like a completely different voice. Like, that's...
Yeah, I totally know what you mean.
Like, that is literally not my voice, but now I don't know if it's just because I'm used to it or if it literally sounds the same to me now. I'm really not sure which.
Yeah, it gets easier when you start recording anything from a podcast to online streaming to when we were doing some of the demos, and, you know, I just had to listen to myself over and over trying to get in the correct pitch for the song and everything, because we don't use auto-tune or any of that bullshit. We actually play our instruments and record our voices. So, yeah, that it took a little while to get used to.
I have literally no musical aptitude whatsoever, so...
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I can't sing. I can't do anything in pitch. I even struggle to tell you whether one note is higher than another note. I'm that bad off.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends like that too. It's funny when they come to a show and they're like, "Oh, you sounded great." It's like, dude, you wouldn't know if we didn't. Thanks for being supportive, but. Yeah, so we tried out a new drummer, and we might, for the first time ever, actually have a drummer.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy. We met him Friday night for the first time, and we practiced all the songs once, and it was like our 100th practice. He did not make one mistake. And then we played a gig that turned out to be pretty cool. And then during the gig, you know, I kind of just, well, let me push his buttons and see. And I announced to everybody that he's a new drummer. And I was like, he's been doing great. So let's see if he makes another mistake. And he just, see if he makes a mistake. And he didn't. He laughed it off. He didn't get nervous. So we might finally get back to playing bigger shows again. Because we've just been taking little ones just to kind of like, you know, just to keep it going. But that'd be really awesome if we could do a... we did one in front of like 500 people. That was incredible. We opened for a couple of big bands and stuff like that. So
I have just discovered that I do not know what is supposed to be the select button. So let's find out what's the button, because I was on that platform and I really wanted to switch to Donkey Kong because the big enemies were falling down and I was quite nervous. It's not the share button. Oh wait, it is the share button. Maybe I wasn't hitting it. Right. It's in an awkward spot, you know, like that, that's the one thing about the PS4 controller is like the locations, like I'm used to where options is, but you know, share is not a button you use very often. But yeah. Okay. It is share, but for some reason, maybe you can't switch characters when you're on the platform. I bet that's it. I think.
Yeah.
Maybe you can't switch characters when you're on the platform.
It's been so long since I played any of these that, or at least. You know, or the little details I have a hard time.
Yeah, I bet that's it. That sounds familiar, maybe. Yeah, I feel like maybe I could have probably had it. I probably beaten Donkey Kong Country 2 faster. I always think of it as the bigger game, but. I'm probably better at it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed as far as you get. You know, I usually for me, whatever reason, like around 2 hours is usually my cutoff. For AM2R, I think I did 2-3 hour stretches or something like that. I love that game so much. But
I can, you know, I don't have the opportunity to do it often enough, but I can. Play a game all day. Like, especially like when I really haven't had the chance to do so for a long time, like, man, there is like no better feeling in the world than just like sinking like 12 hours into a game in a day.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends.
I mean, maybe, you know, not every day, but when I've been really video game deprived, like, man.
Yeah, our bassist Joe does the Warcraft campaigns every now and then, and it's, you know, when I don't even text him on the days that I know he's doing it, because he just straps in and that's it. He's just dead to the world for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I when Uncharted 4 came out, I that whole week, like for 4 consecutive days or however long it took me to beat, like as soon as I got home from work, I literally did not turn on my computer for like 4 or 5 consecutive days. And I put my phone on the other side of the room, and it was like, oh, it was like the best feeling, just like being totally disconnected and just playing a game.
Yeah. So, good question in the comments. How do you feel about the newer Donkey Kong Country games for Wii and Wii U compared to these?
That's a good question. You know, if you know me at all or watched the show for a while, you probably get the impression that I tend to like games. I tend to be pretty accepting of, you know, a game being what it is, and I try to get in the mindset of, you know, well, you know, why did the game designer decide to do this? And, you know, I try to look at it from their perspective. I hated Donkey Kong Country Returns. I went on like the biggest like. Uh oh. Well, I just got a game over. Well, maybe I should play another game now. I don't have to replay all those levels. Any suggestions?
Yeah, any suggestions to comment?
I pulled off my shelf. I recently got this. I haven't really put any time into it. I beat it before on the Mega Man X collection. But I I got a copy of Rockman X3 because the Japanese version is a lot cheaper. I've tested it, but I haven't really played it. I remember, like, at the time I was disappointed because I thought it was, like, really hyped up, but it wasn't quite as good as I thought it was, but I want to play it again. Does it seem like a good game to try out for this, unless you got a better idea?
No, there's a bunch of people have a bunch of great suggestions, but, I mean, I think Rockman 3
as good
is probably
as anything, probably.
To do, to be honest with you.
I'll start this with the DualShock 4.
All right. Yeah, and any other controllers we could think of too, you know.
There we go.
Yeah, AM2R. Sorry, I would love to do that game too, but we're doing the retro receiver testing. So yeah, I would. I love that game, man. I keep talking about it. I probably sound like a broken record, but I was just blown away. You really got to sit down and play that through your PVM. Do you have a way to put a computer through a PVM yet?
No, Corey's kind of been working on that, or he was working on it at one point, but... All right, got to go options, and you got to put dash on R. No other way to play. Let's see.
I wish I spoke Japanese.
there's no Japanese on the screen yet.
No, just the opening title sequence.
Oh, yeah. So Corey, when Corey was here like a month ago, he brought some of his EverDrives and his SD2 SNES, and he had a ROM on there that had Mega Man X3 with Genesis-style sound. It was kind of interesting.
Huh.
The composer for this game is actually the composer of the original Castlevania.
Oh yeah?
And she was at the MAGFest the first year I went, and she saw my Castlevania 1. And the thing that surprised me was in her panel there was like a lot of people were asking questions about this game, and I was like, man, I don't even remember the music in this game. Like Castlevania was what I wanted to ask questions about, you know?
Yeah, there are so many of the older games that I've never played through that I really would love to go back, especially because there's no newer replacement. You know, like, if there's ever a newer version that's better, I'd rather play that just to get, you know... Like, I loved the original Metroid for Nintendo, but I don't have as much fun playing it anymore. I'd rather play any of the other ones after, but the Castlevania games, I really need to go back, and I don't think I ever really played through any. I think I only played one, and I know everybody here is probably going to just, you know, murder me for saying this, but I've actually never played Chrono Trigger, ever.
Well, so. I mean, for some reason, I get the impression you're not much of an RPG guy.
Not. Yeah, I always thought I was because I loved Zelda so much, and everybody always said, you know, I always referred to it as kind of an RPG, but I never thought it was. It's more of like an adventure.
No, yeah, it's really not. I was not into RPGs for a while, but Chrono Trigger was the game that got me into RPGs. So I don't know. Maybe you should play it, or maybe you don't want to go down that dark path.
Yeah, one of these days, definitely. We'll see. I just, you know, not only is it being busy, but I can't concentrate too long on something. So a lot of these RPGs are 60, 70 hours.
Yeah,
I
think a lot of people probably maybe think that me and Corey don't like RPGs because we so rarely feature them. But, it's, you know, it's a matter of time. Like, to actually capture the footage for an RPG is... just so time consuming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a big fan of the Castlevania series. Like my go-to, you know, when people will ask like what Castlevania should I start with? Like, you know, I mean, you know, there's obviously, you know, there's the Metroid style, and then there's the more platformer style.
Yeah, what was the best Metroid style of the Castlevanias? Was that the one for PC Engine CD?
Actually, that one is like kind of like the last great non-Metroid style.
Oh, okay.
I can see why you would assume it is, because it is very closely linked to Symphony of the Night, which is the first Metroid style.
Symphony of the Night. What consoles was that released on?
Symphony of the Night in the U.S. was only PlayStation. There was a Saturn version in Japan, which actually...
But it was in Japanese, right?
Yeah, but the Saturn version is actually, like, really expensive, and I've more recently learned that it's apparently kind of bad. Like, it's a very poorly done port, and I always thought it was, like, for a long time, I assumed it was the definitive version because it has an extra playable character.
Yeah.
But apparently it's just it runs very poorly.
What about Rondo of Blood? Which one was that?
Rondo of Blood is the one on PC Engine CD.
And that's the one that's more NES style, where you just start playing and go through it, right?
Right. And it's a good one. It's a good one. What's interesting is that it's actually got like... it's got two characters. Like in the first, I want to say it's the first level, you can rescue this girl called Maria. And if you do that, then you can play as her. And she's like kind of the game's easy mode. like she's just like a lot easier of a character to play as. So, like, if you, like, kind of wanted that as, like, a softer introduction to Castlevania, generally my go-to recommendation for the non-Metroid styles is Castlevania 4, which is the Super Nintendo one.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy, like, how, like, it's very ambitious for, like, an early Super Nintendo game, Super Nintendo game, because it does like a lot of crazy effects. It's like almost over ambitious, but it's really good. The NES ones are, you know, especially if you don't know what you're getting into, like they can be kind of intimidating, because I think Castlevania 4 is this way too, where you don't have as much control over like. But especially the NES ones, like once you commit to the trajectory of your jump, there's no turning back. So like they can feel stiff if you're not used to them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Metroid style ones are like, totally different. You know, you have very free movement of your jump. They kind of blend RPG elements with the whole Metroid thing, like you equip your characters and stuff like that. But really, like, almost any of those are, like, Symphony of the Night is by far the most popular. Mm-hmm. But, like, any of, like, the Game Boy or DS ones are all, like... They're all like pretty much equally as good. Like there's Aria of Sorrow and Dawn of Sorrow are probably the best. I really like Portrait of Ruin. Some people don't like that one as much. Order of Ecclesia is a little less Metroid-like. And I actually liked that one a lot less, but that one's pretty popular. And then the GBA ones are good. Circle of the Moon is a little bit different in how it feels, but Harmony of Dissonance isn't as popular, but I really liked it. But yeah, like Symphony of the Night is just like a really safe bet if you wanted to try one of those games.
I think I'll start with that.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how Metroid. Like the map style is like exactly the same.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever played through any of the Super Metroid fan remakes?
I have not.
Some of them, I mean, you know, some of them are designed for people who use save states. So they're completely challenging in a different way, but I prefer to use original hardware, so it's kind of annoying. I don't really like those at all.
Right.
But there's a couple that were just really, really well done. I was just blown away. There was one Super Metroid Zero Mission, and I got, you know, a couple hours into it and realized it's not really Zero Mission. I thought somebody took, like, you know, Metroid Zero Mission for Game Boy Advance and just, you know, made it into the Super Nintendo. But no, it's a totally different game, and it was good, but it was just so hard. And the thing that got me about it is there's a lot of backtracking, but because the levels were so much bigger, it's not 3 or 4 minutes to backtrack. Wow. It's like 15 minutes to walk across the, you know, the things. So
someone was telling me about a Mega Man 4 ROM hack that's like apparently really, really good.
There's a bunch of them. There was one where they just updated the color scheme, so it's easier to see things. There was one where they updated, it's like the same game, but just the gameplay is a little bit more enhanced. And then others are actually like, you know, a totally different game, just using the basic, like, root of it. So, Symphony of the Night, is that the one that has the 240p and 480i resolution switch? Somebody just asked that in the comments.
You know, people talk about that, but I've never had that issue in that game. I mean, I have not played through the whole thing on the FrameMeister, but I've never, like, I've recorded plenty of footage from it.
Yeah, you would have noticed then, without a doubt. I mean, it's not something you'd have to go look for. You would totally be like, "Oh, great, here we go, the switch again. Let me wait a minute."
Yeah, I mean, I record from it frequently, but like I say, I've not played through the whole thing. Can anyone specify, like...
So somebody just said it switches to 480i in the menus, which is, it makes sense, because that's exactly what a lot of the PlayStation 1 games did.
That doesn't feel like a game that would have 480i menus. It's very likely that I just would never have paused it when I've recorded footage.
I think the point of resolution switching like that was because in 480i mode, you could just simply fit more on the screen, so your menus could be a little... You know, and remember, when playing on a CRT, the interlaced flicker wasn't as bad as, you know, you'd see it on a flat screen. But I think it was also for general compatibility. I think they just kind of... That was the... Especially PS2 was the era of between types of TVs. But...
Yeah.
And somebody else just posted only the Saturn version changes resolutions, not PS1.
Oh, okay.
Now I want to go play it.
Well, no one cares about the Saturn version, from what I understand, so...
Well, somebody recommended a Digital Foundry video on explaining the versions. You just fell right in that hole, didn't you?
Oh yeah, Corey linked me to it, but I was too busy to watch it at the time. But I would love to go back and watch that.
Yeah,
I really like their stuff. Like I don't really watch any of their videos, but I usually read most of their articles. I just think they're interesting.
Yeah, I actually don't watch a lot of YouTube videos. I watch you guys because even though I you know, some of them, like, I try to help out with, I still love you guys' videos. It's always informative and stuff. But some of the other ones, like, you know, my buddy's the Goodwill Hunter, where he kind of just shows the different ways he finds good deals on stuff. And I like those, but those are always stuff I leave on in the background. Sorry if he's probably logged in going, you know, swearing at me right now. Like, screw you, Bob. Watch my video for real. But... I mean, there's so many good videos out there, but some of them are just so long, and I just, you know, I wish I had the time, but that one seems pretty short, so I'll give it a try.
Yeah, I hate to admit, but I don't watch a ton of YouTube videos either, because I'm working on my own all the time. When I'm not, I will actually, like, play some games that's not for any purpose other than to just play for fun, which happens rarely enough as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a trade-off, right? I mean, that's why I kind of wanted to make sure I did mine as a podcast as well, because it's, you know, a lot of people, like myself, if you're in the car a lot, it's just way easier just to sit there and just listen to something and not, you know, Because for a while I was doing that with YouTube videos, but, you know, I'll get myself killed. I'll be in traffic and staring down at my phone rather than driving, so.
Oops, those are spikes. I died on that level. You want to try another controller?
Yeah, what else you got? Somebody mentioned the NES version, but I think the guts are the exact same as the SNES version, so...
You know, that's, yeah, I mean, it might be fun just to do it for novelty's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to do the DualShock 3 because that's too much of a pain. And I don't think you could really play this game with, like, a Wii remote.
Right, yeah.
I'll try the Famicom one.
Okay, cool.
My only concern is now that this DualShock 4 is on, I don't know how to turn it off.
Oh, yeah. Because those don't have the switches on it, right?
No. So I don't know if... We'll see what I can do. But I'm just afraid that's going to try to immediately pair back up.
Maybe you plug it into
it
your PS4?
It turned off. Uh-oh. I touched the system and... I guess that was a no-no. Well, I guess I'll play another game.
Okay.
Any thoughts?
Man, I don't know. I'd always be partial to the, you know, like any of the Metroid games or anything like that. But actually, you know what?
Why don't I show you Castlevania 4?
Yeah, either that or if you have Super Nintendo. Either that or the Super Game Boy, a Game Boy game on it. Either one, because I've never tested that.
Okay. Hold on a second. I didn't think my system was that sensitive.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you think actually knocked that off? Was it a loose cable, or was it?
I mean, maybe I just it was bumping the cart. Maybe I don't know.
So, what do you think you're gonna play?
I put in something I can beat in 15 minutes.
I can't wait.
I'm trying to get this to sync. Gonna go Famicom. Alright, we're synced up. got my little RNL triggers for the mini. This is Super Game Boy 2, if you couldn't tell from the menu. And I will show you the gloriousness of the Firebrand X7X. Which is right here. Good thing I got my PVM on, because now when I do that, I can't see the pop-up. Mm-hmm. And I don't like this color scheme. I like the last palette on the last page. That's the Game Boy palette to me. Without looking quite as bad as a literal Game Boy looks. So, yeah.
I'm really curious. Works. I'm assuming it'll work fine, but because the Super Game Boy is basically Game Boy hardware, well, no, I guess it's working.
Yeah,
so
it's working.
The aspect ratio of the Super Game Boy, you know, it's still I know Firebrand X has it all configured pretty much perfectly through the FrameMeister, but if you're also playing on a CRT, you could totally see the aspect ratio difference.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's more true to the shape of an actual Game Boy. I'm not sure. I haven't really thought about it much. But I mean, I've got them on side by side, and I can definitely see that it's wider on the PVM. What's cool, it doesn't make as big of a difference for original Game Boy, but it definitely does for Game Boy Advance on the GameCube. My new PVM has a button that actually like zooms in the picture a good bit. And I'm sure that's, nothing new or exciting to you, but my little one doesn't have that. So it like actually blows up the Game Boy Advance games to where they nearly fill the screen.
So for the people that are just logging on now, you want to just quickly run through how you're playing this again? So you got the SNES retro receiver on a Super Nintendo.
On a SNES Mini with RGB mod.
Okay.
Also with digital audio mod, but that's not how it goes to the stream, and it wouldn't work with the Super Game Boy anyway. And it's going out of the Super Nintendo to the G-SCART, and out of the G-SCART to both the FrameMeister and my PVM. And even though the PVM is on, it's not what I'm looking at because it's not what's right in front of me.
So you're actually looking at the LCD monitor in front of you, and it's also going into a capture stream?
Right. So it goes out of the FrameMeister. It splits out of the FrameMeister. Out of the FrameMeister, it goes to my capture card and to my HDMI switcher, and goes from the switcher to my TV.
Gotcha. So, I mean, with this new firmware, the 1.2-something, I don't think you've seen a single issue tonight with all the controllers you've tried,
have you? I mean, there was that one weird thing where I couldn't change characters in Donkey Kong Country, but I think that was...
That could have been the game itself.
I think they don't let you change characters when you're on a moving platform. That sounds familiar.
Well, I don't know. I'm impressed. The NES version I loved. I just, we really should, one of us or all of us or something, do, I don't have access to a true slow motion camera, only the 240 frames of the slow motion built into the iPhone, but it would be really cool to just get, like, a Mario game and just put your finger down on the button and then have a slow motion video showing how many, frames it takes for the character to jump, so we can get a more accurate, kind of like what you did
Yeah, it's such a hard thing to do though, because if you go at anything above 60 frames, then you're only going to get like half of, like the CRT is going to be like half dark.
Yeah.
Which looks kind of terrible.
Yeah, it was like that for the lag testing, too, because I'd have to take, 30 pictures because of the natural CRT scrolling. You'd have that light spot going horizontally up or down the screen, so you wouldn't actually be able to see the stopwatch.
I remember when you sent me some lag tests, and you sent, like, multiple exposures.
Yeah. Well, I did that, too, just to prove out I didn't take one shot and call it a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's I really can't wait to start testing these things on the HDMI GameCube with the Game Boy interface to see how these are going to look on that.
Well, with like using the retro receiver and like...
No, just playing Game Boy in Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance through the GameCube, but using the HDMI out. I guess Badass Consoles was supposed to release it last week, and... He must just be swamped, because, he was hand-soldering all those things.
So you haven't had a chance to try HDMI GameCube yet.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Now, you remember that I had some issues, like, I couldn't get 240p to work well through the... Well, actually, it wouldn't work through the FrameMeister at all, like, over HDMI.
Yeah, that's something that has to be programmed into the scaler itself to actually accept it.
240p over HDMI. And for some reason, my TV accepts it. Now, it doesn't look like exceptional or anything.
Oh, your TV does accept it?
It does. It actually... It'll say, you know, HDMI 3, 240p.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely didn't expect that.
My Panasonic Plasma is very low lag. It's only about 2 to 2.5 frames, but it is pretty picky on the resolution, so I'm sure it wouldn't take it. It wouldn't take the OSSC at all. So
that was like the big thing was like. Like I would probably be, you know, first in line to get a GameCube HDMI mod if the 240p worked on the FrameMeister, but since it doesn't, I already have component cables anyway, I think that's what I'm going to stick with. But now something I don't know a lot about is like BVMs or whatever with like the SDI input.
Yeah.
Now I wonder if you could get 240p to work on that if you converted the HDMI to SDI.
So I believe that's all in the converter. The converter that I have, for whatever crazy reason, won't do 480p, but it will do 720p, and that's zero lag, and it works and looks absolutely perfect. But I couldn't tell a difference when I did like my Wii U in component versus Wii U in HDMI through the HD SDI converter. I couldn't really see a difference. I mean, I only spent maybe 20 minutes playing on each, but, it's something I probably should do an analysis of just to see. But it's just really cool knowing that you can't even have that option.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. I want the HDMI GameCube mod, but, like, right now I feel like my priority for GameCube is Game Boy, and... If the 240p won't work through the FrameMeister, then I'm going to stick with the component cables for now. But if I ever did get the ability to do like SDI, I would definitely be curious like how that would work. I had no idea that there were any PVMs or BVMs with SDI on it until. Someone at MAGFest asked us a question that got me really confused because he was like talking about like the using the FrameMeister on a BVM. And I'm like, why would you do that?
Like, well, you know, why would you do that? That's the weird thing. Like,
He had an interesting reason for it. I forget. Maybe it was that he. I think he may have wanted to use it to like. Basically line double, like maybe he didn't want to see scan lines or something.
Maybe.
I forget what it was.
Either that or maybe, I guess I could see putting one of Firebrand X's scaling for the Game Boy through it, so now you have it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you do Game Boy Advance in 480p widescreen, it'll fill it top to bottom because it's a native, or it's an integer scale of it, so there's not really that... You know, that many reasons. I don't know, that's interesting. But it's still, you're adding a frame and a half of lag to CRT, so why bother?
Yeah, I couldn't quite figure it out, but once I understood the reason, I was like, oh, that's interesting. But at first, like, I thought, well, you know, I may have fooled myself, like, not understanding, because he asked some more questions that, like, he was like, I mean, he was talking about XRGB 2 and 3 and stuff. So he had, like, clearly, like, been into this stuff, like, way longer than we had.
Yeah, well, to answer some of the questions, so if the only reason you would use that is to deinterlace 480i. Jeez.
Oh, that was it. That was it. That was it. That was it. He wanted to use it as a 480i deinterlacer.
There's totally different ways you could do that that won't even really add any lag at all.
Well, and look, it's good.
Somebody
as the
asked
frame
what
master?
SDI is, and it's serial digital interface. So it's basically another way of digital video.
Yeah, it's more like a professional. It's used on like professional equipment mainly, like instead of HDMI. Like,
yeah.
I don't exactly know what all of its specifications and limitations may be, but it typically, you know, like the relatively few times I've had to use SDI at work, it's been no issue to, you know, convert, you know, 1080p to SDI, which it's crazy because it's just a single BNC cable, right? But
right, yeah.
You could do all of the same stuff as HDMI through it. You know what I mean? It's essentially the same cable that you can use for composite video, but you can also use it for 1080p.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of neat.
It's wild.
Yeah, but it was, I think, two or three of my monitors have it, but there's SDI and HD-SDI. And I haven't really tried to see what would work with just the regular ones, because my converter doesn't do 480p, so I gotta... I mean, that's on a very long list of stuff I got to get to on the website. So I still have to do the Toro video that I've been promising I'd do for a couple weeks now. I just, yeah. Somebody said I thought you needed dual link SDI for HD. Nope. On my back of my BVM, it's just one input, just, you know, the one BNC cable. Yeah, I really, you know, I still am just dying to try out that the GameCube thing, though. But no word from Michael.
Are you getting one?
Oh yeah, I already sent him mine. I already, you know, I already bought it. You know, I paid full price, you know, months ago, and just said, you know, send it to me whenever you can because I can't wait to review it. But he, I mean, he's doing everything by hand. He's doing everything himself, so I don't bust his chops for any delays. You know.
Yeah.
This is funny, I've never actually seen this far into a Kirby game before on Game Boy. I always played the some of the other ones.
Well, you know, I always thought of it as a Game Boy series originally, but, you know, because for whatever reason, like, I loved, you know, the Kirby games on Game Boy, but I for some reason just skipped over the NES one until I started, you know, back in the good old Funko Land days, and I was starting to rebuild my NES collection. I finally got Kirby's Adventure. I'm like, wow, this is good. Like, it surprised me, like, how well it compared to, like, Kirby Superstar, which is, well, it's my traditional favorite, but the cool thing is that, like, the Kirby games that they're releasing now are, like, just as good, which is, like, kind of crazy. We're, like, in a modern golden age for Kirby, which I never expected we would see again, because, like, have you played Kirby Superstar?
No.
It's one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. It's absolutely unbelievable. Like, what's so cool about it is that it's got, like, so many powers. It's a great co-op game. The way that, like, you know, how in Smash Brothers you, like, you know, hold in a different direction, you do, like, different attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Kirby Superstar, you know, Masahiro Sakurai, same director, is almost like a template for Smash Brothers. It even has the, it even has, like, the shield from Smash Brothers if you hold the R button.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy. And, like, so each of Kirby's powers has a different move set, like, sort of a complex move set, and you can just do all kinds of different things with them. Like, you know, if you're dashing, or if you're jumping and dashing, or, you know, it's just all sorts of different things. And it's just, then, you know, they teamed up with Flagship, which was a Capcom developer that made, like, the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance Zelda games, mm-hmm. which I didn't think were that good, and the Kirby games they released were definitely not my favorites either. And they, you know, went back to the Kirby's Adventure style, where, you know, each move is very simple and basic. I mean, nothing wrong with that, but it's just that Superstar was so much better. And now, starting with Return to Dreamland, which was the Wii Kirby game, or one of the Wii Kirby games, it goes back to, like, it finally, for the first time in, you know, by that time it was around, you know, first time in, like, 15 years, and I'm doing really dumb stuff right now. that they actually went back to that style of gameplay, and it was awesome. And then the first one they released on 3DS was like that again, and then the new one that they just released, Planet Robobot, on the 3DS, same sort of deal, where it's, you know, just got these really fun movesets for every single power. And so yeah, it's cool. Like, the past three, like, major Kirby platformers have been like really pretty much equal to Superstar. So it takes a lot for me to admit, you know, that a long-standing old favorite, you know, could potentially be replaced by some of the modern ones, but they really are just that good. So yeah, any Kirby fans who have not delved into the modern ones, like, you definitely gotta give them a go. They're, like, as good as Superstar. It's excellent.
Did you say before that you didn't really like some of the Game Boy Zelda games?
I love Link's Awakening. I'm actually wearing a Link's Awakening shirt right now.
Oh, yeah.
But I wouldn't say I don't like. I mean, there's no Zelda game I don't like, except for Four Swords. I like Four Swords Adventures, but the actual, like, Four Swords is pretty garbage.
Yeah, I didn't really like that at all. Adventures. I really did like all of the Game Boy versions, and, you know, it's funny. I actually haven't played Link's Awakening since originally on the Super Game Boy with the Game Boy version. So I guess DX is the color remake. That's on my list to play on the game. Yeah. The Game Boy player again.
Yeah, I mean, I've played both, particularly the original version of Link's Awakening, like, so many times. The Capcom ones, the Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons and Minish Cap, like, I wouldn't say I didn't like them, but I just did not like them anywhere near as much as Nintendo's in-house developed Zelda games.
All right, well, I'll agree with that. A couple of people are asking about the CDI Zeldas. Have you ever actually played those?
I really regret that I haven't, because, like, I'm a big Zelda fan, and I wish I had, you know, my dentist had a CDI in his lobby, like, years and years ago, and I, like, always wanted to work up, like, the courage to ask, like, would you ever consider selling that?
Jeez, my cousin Scott, the one that's going to be on the podcast tomorrow, he and I have been, you know, we're cousins, we've known each other forever, but we used to walk into the store called FYE, which I don't know if they were around the country,
I'm familiar
with, or something.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I've never, like, I've stopped in some and thought they were disappointing, but I'm sure that's not always how they are.
Yeah, well, the one in, you know, the Trumbull Mall in Connecticut was huge. It had a big arcade in it. It was great. And we would walk in, and, you know, we'd see these things that as kids are just unfathomably expensive. So we'd see the CDI and, you know, that one softcore porn game, Voyeur, you know, as 12 years old. We're like, ooh, I wonder what it'd be like to play that. And then, you know, the 3DO came out for, like, you know, like a gazillion dollars. And then even the Saturn was really expensive. And I remember seeing all those. And now that I'm going back and kind of doing a page on the site for every one of the consoles, you know, I got kind of a little obsessed with the CDI, and I was lucky enough to find really good deals on everything. So I got the keyboard, and I got, you know, all the accessories, and I'm going to do a Let's Play of The Seventh Guest. Because I actually think the CDI has a lot of inherent controller lag, and it's a terrible system.
Really?
But I actually think that The Seventh Guest might be a good game to play on it, because you don't have to worry about any of the DOSBox emulation, and it's got the keyboard and mouse. So, yeah, I mean, I just, like, I think that might actually be a good use for it. But I was just, you know, of course I RGB modded mine because, you know, I'm me. But, like, all those other ones in the 3DO, there was only, like, 5 games that I was able to play on it that I actually thought were better than other consoles. Jaguar was the only one that, Tempest 2000... If you play that with the spinner controller,
that game has come up. The Jaguar version of that has come up from so many guests on this stream for some reason. Like, they keep bringing it up.
Oh, yeah?
I've never played any version of Tempest personally.
I never liked it because I always played it with a D-pad. And then when this one guy on eBay sells the modded controllers, mm-hmm. so you could either send him yours or just buy one from him, and he adds the spinner controller, and you could either put it in back. With a Switch, so you could keep it as a regular controller. I actually preferred it where the D-pad was, but, like, upside down, so you're holding it from the bottom. And I sat down, and I played Tempest, and I was like, all right, well, let me just play it real quick, and then I'll write up a review of the controller. And I blinked, and, you know, 90 minutes went by. I didn't realize how much fun I was having with it until I looked at the clock. So it was absolutely good. And, you know, I got my Jaguar for, like, $20 a couple years ago. So from that perspective, it was worth buying that Jaguar, the controller, and the game just to play Tempest. But I just walked out of a game store today, and there was $125 for a Jaguar console only.
So someone asked in the chat, did ZR and ZL triggers on the Pro Controller do anything with the receiver? I was playing Donkey Kong Country at the time, which R and L is useless in that. But when I played Mega Man X3, I was using the DualShock 4, and I tested both the front and back shoulder buttons, and they do the same thing. Mm. So, did you really just beat Kirby? The original Kirby's so short. You know, I didn't actually own this game until like 3 years ago because, like, I had several friends who had this game on the Game Boy, and like I beat it like all the time playing their copies. And it always felt like a waste of my money to buy this game that I'd beaten so many times. But, like, I bought, like, all the other Game Boy Kirby games myself. And so I was finally, like, 3 years ago, I'm like, you know what? I should own this game. And it's actually kind of funny. I got it at Too Many Games, like, 3 years ago. And shortly after that, I, like, made this random decision that I'm like, you know what? I'm so close to owning every Kirby game. I should just own every Kirby game. Mm-hmm. And I finally, Too Many Games got my last one, which was Air Ride. So now I own all the Kirby games. I have to put a disclaimer on that, though. It's all of the American release Kirby ones, games. Yeah. There is... But I don't count the Japanese ones for several reasons. One, because the only like real Japanese exclusive Kirby game is a Super Nintendo port of Kirby Star Stacker, which is like a Tetris style puzzle game that is on Game Boy here. And the other, there's like, there was an interesting conversation. I don't know why someone messaged us about this in particular, because I don't think I've talked that much about how big of a Kirby fan I am on the show before. But someone, like, I guess maybe because they were talking from a technical perspective, there's something called, I want to say it's called Kirby's Toy Box or something like that, that was for the Satellaview. I think there were like 6 ROMs, and they're like mini games, and they were kind of made to promote Kirby Superstar.
Hold on, I'll tell you right now. I have all the Smoke Monster ROM packs, so if it's available, I'll.
Interesting because the guy said that he was only able to find like 2 or 3 of what I think are 6. I think it's 6 ROMs. I could be wrong on the number. Yeah, just because there's like no legit way to like actually get that game. That was why I decided to just write off the Japanese version of Star Stacker as well. Just because it seemed like kind of pointless to delve into the Japanese side of it. If I couldn't have like legit versions of the Satellaview anyway. But the guy was interested in knowing like if there was any way to like put those on like a repro card or something like that. I have no idea.
The SD2 SNES is definitely the way to go for that. And Michael LaRouche was on here before, and I'm sorry for murdering this pronunciation of your last name. Sorry, dude. But he was one of the guys that does the MSU audio hacks for him. So, and was one of the guys that worked on the Zelda ones. Do you have an SD2 SNES yet?
No, I don't. I don't have any EverDrives.
You would absolutely love all of the fan hack stuff.
Oh yeah, Corey. Corey made a point when he came here like a month ago, to definitely show me some stuff. Like we actually had a couple other friends over, and I didn't think they were going to be that into it, but they were like really kind of into like we played Link to the Past with orchestral music, and they thought it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Link to the Past one blew me away. Same thing with the Zelda or the Metroid one with the orchestral soundtrack. There was just so many great ones there.
Shogun Gino asks, "What is my favorite Kirby game next to Superstar?" That's a tough call because honestly, I think Return to Dreamland, Triple Deluxe, and Planet Robobot are pretty equal quality. Part of me might lean toward Return to Dreamland just because it was kind of like the first revisit to that style after so long. And it's also co-op. It's fun to play co-op. I've played it three players once, and I played through it again two players. Yeah, those are all just like really good games.
The MSU1 patch for Final Fantasy games, I think it's in beta stage, but it's totally playable. They're just working out the bugs. There's a link to it in one of my past episodes. It was the one with Retro Dan. So if I can't post links in the thing, but you just go into the last, you know, go to my channel and the retro roundups and just look for the one with Retro Dan, and it's the link's in there. It even has its own installer built in. It's actually really well done. So,
yeah, I do know that Star Stacker has a physical Super Famicom cart, and I've thought about grabbing it several times, but it's like it's recently gotten really expensive. It's the toy box, this Teleview mini games that I was like, what's the point? Do I like Epic Yarn? Yes, I do like Epic Yarn. I know that one maybe is a little controversial because it's like you can't like die in it, but it's just like it's got really cool style. I love the style, and it's just like really fun to like hunt down like all the stuff. Like the joy of that game is like getting 100% in it. Because it's just, you know, collecting stuff. It's fun to collect the stuff. Really, they're like the only Kirby games I don't like. And don't like might be a bit of a stretch. Well, yeah, I would say I don't like Amazing Mirror. Like the concept of doing like a Metroid style level design in a Kirby game is amazing, but that the level design and structure is so confusing and the map is completely useless. I don't like that game. The last one I finally got, Air Ride, it's okay. It's a little weird. I know that game does have its fans, but it seems like the kind of game that you really kind of need like the right sort of circumstances to really enjoy it. It's definitely a very multiplayer focused game, and it seems like the kind of game that, you know, if you were playing it in, you know, high school or college or something, and like it was just something you played all the time, you could get into it. But right now, I'm just not really going to really get into a brand new multiplayer game unless it's like a co-op game, you know. That's just me.
Two questions. One was about Star Fox 2. There's one guy that makes a multi-cart. It's tucked away somewhere, but it's Star Fox, Star Fox 2, and then Star Fox Competition. And I think he's even his next model of it will have a physical switch that you could change to if you want it overclocked or not. So that's definitely the best one to get. And I played through it, and I absolutely love it. And somebody asked if I'm in a warehouse or a storage area. this is like I have an like an office, which is like a small room in my apartment, and half of it's for all my music stuff, for all my recording equipment and guitars and stuff, and the other half is in these rolling racks, and I kind of roll the racks over to the side during the day, but whenever I do the podcast or an interview, I figure any backdrop is better than just open space behind me and a door leading to my kitchen and some guitar project and a million pieces behind me. So I'll do a tour of the room before I move. I think I'm moving in like a month or two. Oh, wow. So I'll do the full tour before that. But yeah, a lot of people, even my some of my friends that, you know, maybe they haven't been by in like a year or something, like, hey, you know, do you record out of a storage area? Like, no, dude. No, I don't. But good question.
It makes you look like you've got cool stuff.
I do have cool stuff. I'm lucky, man. I appreciate the hell out of that. So,
but about the multi-cards. Do you know anything about the rewritable Super Famicom cartridges? I think they could hold like 7 games that you took to like a kiosk. And I wonder like if you could like put anything you wanted onto them now. Like, you know, the people have probably figured them out.
No. I mean, the only rewritable ones I've seen are obviously the Famicom discs. But no, I haven't seen that. But that's kind of neat.
They're called, what are they called? Does anyone in the chat know what they're called? They're called, I think they're called, like, it's funny because I think they're called something like Nintendo Power, which, you know, you would obviously associate with the magazine. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what it's, I don't know if the carts are called that. Or if that was like the name of like the kiosks that you took them to, but no, they were like very late. They were very late. It's actually kind of crazy because there was like a Fire Emblem game, Fire Emblem Thracia 776, that was released exclusively for that rewritable cartridge format. And later, like, I want to say it's like 2000 or something crazy like that, they released like a physical Super Famicom cartridge for that game. It's like so wild to think of like Super Famicom games coming out in like 99 and 2000. It's just wild.
So, I don't know. I think I would call this a huge win for the Retro Receiver. It was really just, you know, no problems, no issues. I still have mine on the older firmware, so maybe I'll do a really short, like, 2 or 3 minute video just showing the problem, updating it, and showing the problem going away just to prove it through. But
yeah, I think, interestingly enough, I think I liked playing with the PS4 controller the best just because the feel of the buttons was good. If I put this up to my, you know, this controller feels like really... Like, you know, just the feel of the plastic, the shape of it and everything is like dead spot on. The D-pad feels great. The buttons, I feel, though, maybe just have a bit too much click to them.
I could feel a little bit of a difference, but I'm so picky when it comes to Super Nintendo.
I mean, I am too. This is by far the closest non-official controller I've ever played.
Agreed, 100%.
But there were times where it something maybe felt a little funny. But I'm sure, like, if I like really commit to using this, like maybe as my primary Super Nintendo controller, I'll probably get used to it in no time. Because you know the only funny thing is just that little extra click on the face buttons. But I could really see myself like enjoying this as my go-to, and it was fun playing Kirby with a Famicom style too.
Yeah. Do you have a link on where to buy these? A couple of people asked.
The only place that I knew of was PlayAsia.
Yeah, just a link to the PlayAsia thing for people.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull that up, because I am allowed to leave links.
Right.
We don't have like a affiliate program link for PlayAsia or anything like that.
Yeah, no.
Let's see. Retro Receiver. I think they might, you know, it's funny, I won't say the... They've raised the price, because when they first released the NES Retro Receiver was $20. I'm not crazy, am I?
No, it was $20.
There's the plate.
What's it up to now? Ah, there's the link.
25. Like this, huh, both right. of them
well, that's
are.
That's not too terrible.
Yeah, but it's like, it is just like, I definitely would have had a lot more hesitation about buying the NES receiver than I did if it had been 25. But 20 is just like a very, like, good impulse buy price. It's like, you know, hey, I can afford that. But yeah, I mean, like, seriously, like, these are just really good and convenient. If they continue making, like, obviously they've focused on Nintendo style controllers so far. But if they ever did like a Sega Genesis, like I'm definitely willing to buy the things these people make. They're solid. Like they've clearly put a lot of work into making sure that they are as accurate as humanly possible. So I'm also apparently playing the stream, and I shouldn't be doing that. I didn't know that was running in the background, but it doesn't really matter at this point.
So somebody asked, where do you recommend buying the Game Boy Player for the GameCube? My preferred method is just buy a Game Boy Player without the boot disc, because you can get them way cheaper without the boot disc, and then get an Action Replay. I'm pretty sure any Action Replay disc, as long as it's for your region, NTSC or PAL. And then get an SD card reader that goes into the memory card slot. So total price, you're probably talking after shipping maybe $40 total. And then run the Game Boy interface software through Swiss. And then that's kind of the best way to do it.
Yeah. So you're saying it's literally cheaper to do the homebrew software than it is the official. If you
it's
don't...
about the same, and there's no modding required.
Right. So, that's what's so appealing about the SD Media Launcher things.
Right.
You know, a lot of people have told us that Codemasters is apparently really, or not, is it not Codemasters? Or Code Junkies. A lot
right,
of people
yeah.
have told us, you know, you shouldn't trust them, you know, they never sent my thing, blah, blah. You know, that's where we ordered our thing from, like, a few years ago, and I don't remember having any issue.
No, they sent it right away. It arrived in, like, a week or two from the UK.
Yeah, so. But I guess a lot of people have had issues with them, so, you know.
Especially being in stock and stuff like that.
Yeah, but, so, I guess we can't necessarily give them our full-hearted recommendation, but... they're the only place I know of that like sells the SD Media Launcher with the Action Replay.
Right. I tried piecing it out in a couple times now, and they've always worked. So that's like at least you don't have to get the package; mm-hmm. you can just get them. The one thing too is a lot of SD cards are not compatible, and I don't really know. I think you just got to look for the smaller ones, which is a bit of a pain. But you know,
I kind of want to get a Indigo GameCube and get just to have something different because I've got a black one.
Yeah.
And like now, like at the time, like I like definitely wanted the black one. I didn't want the purple one. And now, like that the GameCube era is over, now I look back and I'm like, I guess the Indigo really is kind of like the iconic color for the system.
And if you want a matching Game Boy player, you have to get the Indigo
Japanese
Game Boy player from Japan.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was kind of looking at those a few weeks ago, like, but I kind of like I don't want to do any mods to my original GameCube whatsoever. But I kind of want to get the Mega Drive that Badass Consoles has, so yeah. I can like launch. Swiss and launch the just launch GBI from Swiss. I kind of just want to have that.
Install that in mine as well. And I'm also I'm looking into seeing if there's a way, because Code Junkies, I don't think that's a licensed GameCube thing. So I'm wondering if there's a way you'd have to have a lot of them, but to actually manufacture a Swiss boot disk that could boot on unmodded consoles, just like
yeah, I don't know how that Action Replay disk got burned.
You'd have to get 1,000 of them. I think because that's the number. Because there's all the factories in China that just they already have the software and. You know, they'll do
Oh, so they'll still burn GameCube discs
As long as they still have it there, but you never know with Nintendo. Nintendo probably demanded that they sent back their, game manufacturing machines or something like that.
Yeah, but I would really like to do that. I kind of want to have like that that Mega Drive, you know, where they remove the disk drive. But I kind of want to have that in another system. That's why I'm kind of looking at getting an Indigo system and an Indigo Game Boy player. Just to kind of have as like a more as a backup thing, or just to experiment with homebrew software and stuff. And you know, if my GameCube ever did die, you know, that would be a way that I could play. You know, I've told you before, you know, I'm not too huge into the whole like EverDrive thing. Mm-hmm. We're going to do an episode on them, but for some reason, I'm much more interested in boot methods for disk-based systems, like that PS2 method that you started to get me hooked up with, and I haven't had a chance to even put it in my system yet, because I've got like some of my PS1 and PS2 game saves on my hard drive.
Yeah, I would buy a second one just for that. So there's two things that you just kind of reminded me of. First is that, you know, now some of these consoles are still so cheap. Like, PS1s are still $20 at a lot of these game stores. I would buy, if there's ever a chance that you might need a second, I would buy it now, because it's not too far away that it's going to start to go back up in price. You know, maybe another one generation or two.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, whereas you might not be so into ROM carts, eventually you're not going to be able to get CD-ROM replacement parts. It might be 10 years from now, but it's an eventuality.
Yeah.
So these optical drive replacements or the hard drive boot disk methods and stuff like that are really going to be the only way to preserve.
Well, and that's why I'm interested in the ones for the disk-based consoles. The cartridge-based consoles, I guess I have a little more faith in the cartridge-based consoles for their longevity. And I just like playing the real card. I can definitely see the value in the EverDrives, but right now it's just not really a priority. That's more Corey's department. But the disc based ones, and Corey hasn't dipped his toe in those, but like definitely, because you know I was borrowing for a while a PAL GameCube from Badass Consoles. And that was where I was just like, oh, that's kind of nice. You know, and my Dreamcast, like, it works perfectly, but it is so freaking loud. You know, I could definitely see myself, like, if I saw, like, a cheap Dreamcast that, you know, I would prefer to do it on a system that already kind of has a bad drive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I wouldn't mind just, like, start to, like, get some backup systems. You know, like, I've got two PS2s. I've got one fat and one slim. I use the slim primarily now. And I'm not thinking about buying another PS2 to do the hard drive thing. Because, I mean, it's just taking the hard drive out. I mean, I put the hard drive in myself anyway. You know, it's not like it was originally stocked that way. But, you know, that's why I don't want to do anything to my GameCube. And, you know, I guess with the Wii, you know, you can just do all that with the homebrew channel, can't you? Probably. I've not done anything with the homebrew channel yet, other than just, you know, making my system region free. But I do kind of want to play around with it a little bit more. And I guess the Saturn, it sounds like, is potentially going to be getting SD launcher type stuff. It should be, in theory, like crazy easy. You just put it in the cartridge slot.
Right, you just plug it in, and that's the one I'm waiting for. I'm not getting the optical drive emulator for that, because with the one for the Saturn that's coming out, if you want to play an original disc, you just unplug the other thing, plug your disc in, and that's it. So
is that something that's coming soon? Because like it sounds like it was only just recently sort of broken into.
He's been working on it for years, so I would say, I mean, probably a year, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Going to be really hard to get your hands on, especially considering the price of Saturn games. Like, people are going to want that so bad.
Well, the Neo Geo ROM cart that's coming out soon, I think that's going to just be amazing.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, all those people that are just selling some of those games for $2,000, you know, there's a difference between being an avid collector and a price gouger. So it's just... Yeah, I can't wait to try that one out. I guess he just announced last week that he'll have a working video of the prototype in like 2 or 3 weeks. So it should be on sale, you know, by wintertime.
Wow, that's awesome. I will get that for sure, because I mean it's so awesome how that's going to be plug and play. As far as I know, you're not going to have to do anything to your system, right?
Right. Yeah, you just plug it in.
So. Like that is so cool. Like that's definitely a big advantage that Saturn has. That I mean, I'd buy that without a second thought, just because of just how easy it is to do without doing anything to your system. So yeah, and you know, I you pointed me a few weeks ago to where they were selling the PlayStation IDE adapter. Mm-hmm. But you have to have some sort of internal mod to your system to actually make use of that, right?
Yeah. So you have to basically install something that's as complicated as a mod chip. So, but it's not a mod chip, and it won't affect it. So if you have some of those games that detect if a mod chip is in there or not, it won't affect that at all. But yeah.
Okay. All right. So yeah, but do you know how much the mod chip is? And
well, it comes as a kit, and I think it was like $125 for everything.
For everything, okay.
And then you could buy the chip separate as well. So a couple people, we were just talking about that, I think, last week, where you have an NTSC and a PAL PS1, you could just buy two of the chips and one of the ROM things for it so that you could just swap back and forth.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in dipping my toe into that stuff for the disc-based consoles. I think that'll be interesting to play with. And once I get a taste of that, then maybe I'll start thinking about EverDrives. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I think once you actually sit down and play one of the MSU audio games start to finish, you'll probably buy an SD to SNES just for that. So.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they're a little pricey, but we'll see.
Don't get the Chinese knockoffs. I've bought an original from Crix. I didn't buy, you know, I don't buy knockoffs. But then I saw one a couple weeks ago for like $100, and I wanted to see, is it the same? Will it run all the games? And it doesn't. It doesn't play MSU audio games. It doesn't work right. So definitely don't buy any of the knockoffs.
All right. Well, anything else?
No, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's always a good time. People, be sure to go to Bob's YouTube channel and his website, RetroRGB.com. His YouTube channel is just YouTube.com/RetroRGB, and he does this great show every Monday. You release in the mornings, is that right?
Yep, Monday mornings and they get released.
It's the Retro Weekly Roundup, and where, you know, he's talking about stuff that people are talking about, you know, way deep in the retro tech forums, you know, so he's kind of bringing that information to the masses, and you can kind of get some ideas of kind of the cool hacks and stuff that people are working on and figuring out, and so
the show is usually broken up into three parts. You know, I kind of report on anything that's happened that week in the retro gaming world, and then I do all the Q&A stuff. So anybody that emails me questions or posts right in the YouTube comments, I try to answer them, you know, any of the best ones that I think would be cool for everybody to hear. So if I missed anybody's questions because I was answering something else tonight, just my video will be up tomorrow early morning Eastern time. You can just post in that and I'll answer all your questions there. And I try to do good interviews, which are just my favorite part. Tomorrow I have my cousin Scott on, which it's kind of different. We kind of just hang out and talk, so I'm not really sure how that's going to go, but definitely leave your feedback. If it sucks, we won't do it again. If you like it, we'll keep doing it that way every once in a while. So, but we have a couple of really awesome guests planned in the next month, you know, people that have contributed just a huge amount to the scene, so it should be a lot of fun.
All right, well, thanks for so much for joining us. Everyone, look for sometime this week, maybe possibly midweek, possibly on Friday, the long-awaited Framemeister Alternatives episode. No one is awaiting the release of that episode more than me, believe me. I feel like I can foresee a day where I am not working on this episode. It has felt so far off, but it is approaching. So hopefully you all will enjoy that. Next week, Corey will be streaming with the OSSC and Framemeister. Same thing, but side by side. So, you know, if you're viewing the stream at a high enough quality, hopefully it'll give you some idea. Yeah, that'll be fun. So, big week, hopefully. So
awesome.
All right.
Thanks again, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, everyone.